Hi, this is Daniel Garb of the Movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Mimi and Luke are young siblings in a nondescript town. Mimi's the younger one, but she's more aggressive. They spend a lot of their time playing games they invent, like Crazy Ball. But after a game one day, they uncover a strange glowing stone buried deep in the ground. And when Mimi removes it, she unknowingly and unwittingly activates a hideous monster, the epitome of evil, a creature responsible for the deaths of millions, a man who can casually tear the victims apart in an orgy of blood and gore. But since Mimi holds the gem, she soon discovers he is in her power. What will a little girl do with her newfound strength? Will she use it for good or for evil? Will she save the planet or destroy it? And can she and her brother control this powerful demon they call Psycho Goreman? Psycho Goreman is also the name of a new comedy horror movie about kids and alien beings. It includes science fiction, family comedy, first love, all of these set against a potentially universe-shattering apocalypse. The film is written and directed by Stephen Kostansky, who brought us twisted, over-the-top genre classics like The Void and Manborg. The film is co-produced by Peter Kaplowski, who worked on Stephen's other films and is also noted as the curator of TIFF's Midnight Madness series. Steve couldn't make it today. He's shooting a film as we speak, but I'm very pleased to have Peter here via Zoom to tell us more about Psycho Goreman. Hi, Peter. Thanks so much for coming in, well, digitally.
It's my pleasure. I could talk about this film for hours. I'm so immensely proud of it. It's very much something that Steve has been working towards for a long time, and I've been glad to help him.
Well, great. Before we start, you may or may not remember, but I met you once when I walked a mile during a blizzard to pick up a screener of a movie I was reviewing at a film festival that you were running at the Royal Cinema.
I remember I was thinking about this during your introduction. I was like, I remember meeting you, Daniel. This was for the What the Film Festival that I run at the Royal Cinema.
That's right. And the film was A Bread Factory, which is a great movie by Patrick Wang. And Psycho Goreman takes place not in a bread factory, but in an abandoned shoe factory.
Yes.
Okay, so I've given a brief introduction, but could you flesh out the film a bit? Tell us about, set the scene for Psycho Goreman.
I mean, I've often described the movie to people as, imagine E.T., but E.T. wanted to eat the children. I mean, that's the tension that's at play here. It's in the mold of an Amblin 1980s family science fiction, fantasy, adventure film, maybe a bit more closer to the types of family movies that were made direct-to-video in the early 90s. But what Steve has done is he's kind of filtered it through a very adult comic book violence sensibility. So these kids are kind of going through the motions of what would typically happen in a family film, except the alien creature they're hanging out with is decapitating people. It's turning people into mutant brains. And none of this is phasing the kids, I think, to comic effect. They're kind of like, whatever. They're just happy to be in control of the situation and push this intergalactic space emperor around. In many ways, it was an opportunity for Steve to take a lot of the films he had grown up with, both the films that were for kids and some of the films that he watched as a kid that were also advertised to kids at the time, but were really more for adults, like Terminator 2 or Army of Darkness or RoboCop.
Even like I felt, you know, hints of Joe Dante and...
Oh, yeah, very much so. Yeah. It has that edge to it. I mean, I think for Steve, the perfect audience for this film is... a young boy, a girl who is maybe not supposed to be watching this movie. You know, like it's the movie that maybe gets put on because the the acronym of the title is PG, and parents might mistake it for a PG-rated film when it's really an R-rated film, and the kids' imagination suddenly explode, and they now want to see monster movies. They now want to rent Sam Raimi movies and Peter Jackson movies, and it's kind of hopefully a gateway to horror and genre cinema.
Yeah, I think genre movies in general, they aren't aimed at a specific age. They seem to be like in the mindset of a 12 or 8 or 14 year old kid, but with the adult sensibility running through it.
Absolutely.
So, speaking of movies like this, everyone knows that in Star Wars, Darth Vader was played by David Prowse in the physical role and James Earl Jones as his voice. And I see that in this movie as well. The Psycho Goreman has both a physical player and a voice player. Can you talk about how that worked?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't an intentional nod to that. It was something, though, that when it arrived, we felt that was kind of fitting. I mean, we're both so privileged to work with Matthew Ninibar and Steve Lajos. How it happened is both of them actually auditioned for the role, and Matthew absolutely had the physicality. Like, it was very clear just to watch him move in front of the camera, even without a suit on, that he had the physicality that the character needed. And so we ended up casting him, and he was terrific on set. I mean, so much of the effect is really a testament to his performance. But when Steve Lajos auditioned, he didn't quite have the physicality, but Steve was very into his voice, and he would think about his voice all the time, like, wow, what an amazing voice. and what ended up happening was when he was working on the rough cut, he laid in Steve Lajos's audition on the footage and was like, you know what? I think this is what we're going to need to do. We're going to need to bring both these performers together. And in the end, like you said, it creates a kind of a Darth Vader dynamic, which is cool. But it really pushed things over the top. And what I think Steve really appreciated too, because at one point we were even thinking of trying to get like a celebrity voice actor, like a Mark Hamill or I'm blanking on some of the voices that we were going, like Lance Hendrickson or something. We were trying to go after some names, and then we realized that another reason why Steve Lajos would be perfect is people aren't familiar with that voice, and it feels like it could be just a Saturday morning cartoon voice where you're not associating it with anyone. It really feels like a Saturday morning cartoon character that
totally
breathed to life.
Totally. And we haven't really gotten into that aspect of the film, but Psycho Goreman has a nemesis called Pandora, and she actually has three actresses playing the part because she also takes a human form. So there's the physical, there's the voice, and then there's the human form. I wonder, no spoilers, but I wonder if you could introduce her role in the movie. She was a Templar. Who are the Templars?
Well, that's the thing, is in making a movie like this, it was very important for Steve to figure out, how, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, but we wanted to give a great sense of scope. And he was a big fan of the Masters of the Universe movies, which, you know, people at the time were disappointed that you had this big fantasy world, and yet the whole movie took place in suburbia. And from Steve's perspective, it was like, okay, we have to set a movie in a place that it will be affordable to shoot, like suburbia. So the hope would be, let's every 10 minutes, let's cut away to some other fantastic realm and convince the audience that there's a bigger universe out there. So throughout the film, we're learning that the rest of the universe has heard that Psycho Goreman is awakened on Earth, and they're all worried about it because he's caused so much destruction in the galaxy. And so Pandora is the leader of this galactic council. And in a normal movie, she would be the good guys. She's like, looks like an angel. She's, you know, all in white and seems to have a lot of nobility towards her. But as you know, begin to experience the story, you realize that good and evil become fairly interchangeable terms depending on your perspective. And that, you know, PG's past actually there's a lot of sympathy towards PG based on where he came from and what happened to him and what happened to him perhaps as the result of the Templars. And so Pandora is this character that comes to Earth expecting to be kind of the hero figure to sort of save humanity and the universe, but the kids take PG's side. And so that becomes a big conflict throughout the movie.
Yeah, and that is a, you know, a common theme in the, you know, the classic The Beauty and the Beast, King Kong, Frankenstein, where the villain, the evil monster, actually may have some kindness somewhere within. Like, King Kong? So he scares everyone around them, but maybe the heroine or the children can see through this hideous outward shell.
I mean, at the same time, I think it was very important for Steve to at least have the joke, because one thing he thought, one of the kernels that came to him as an idea for this film was, you know, a monster movie where the monster doesn't appear to learn a lesson, where the monster like is pretty much in the same place as he was at the end of the film, and yet the movie is trying to convince you that there has been an arc that has occurred,
right,
and that maybe this is a story,
right,
about
that's sort
about
of the
love.
Twist, yeah.
But Psycho Gorman, you know, he, at the end of the day, he is what he is. He's a Saturday morning cartoon monster, and he's never going to stop being that. And you know, if there is a moral or theme to the movie, it's be true to yourself.
So, what was I going to say? Cool, Gorman. Sorry about that.
No worries. I mean, it is an overwhelming movie. I mean, every time I watch it, I'm kind of blown away by how much stuff we were able to cram into the film. One of the other challenges for ourselves is we wanted it to be like that moment in The Empire Strikes Back when you see all the bounty hunters, and as a kid, you're like, "Whoa, who is IG-88? Who's Boba Fett? What is his backstory? I need to know everything." And so, in this movie, I mean, we have over 25, I think, unique creatures in the film.
Wow.
To 28.
So
some of them are far background, but we're hoping that fans watch the movie and be like, "I want to own that action figure. I want to, you know, want to learn his backstory."
So this is radio. So people are listening to us, but they can't see it.
Yeah.
So can you physically describe what Psycho Gorman looks like?
I mean, he kind of is a mix between the Creeper from Jeepers Creepers and the Wishmaster and Ivan Ooze. He's got that purple Ivan Ooze quality from the Power Rangers movies.
But he also has like red, I don't know if it's blood vessels or what, but they sort of glow and shine at times.
Yeah, he's got like pink veins that are kind of cut into his shell of a body. And how we achieve that effect actually is with a glow in the dark, or it's a UV paint that when we hit it with a certain light, it would actually begin to pulse and glow. So it's a practical effect. And that was very important in this film. Like, all the creatures are puppets, people in suits, and like very light animatronic work. It was all very important that everything in the movie literally was going to be in front of the camera. And I think one of the reasons we were able to make so much is that Steve has worked in the effects industry for over 10 years and has a lot of friends, and he brought a lot of help from the folks at Masters Effects to support this film. And I think a lot of people were really excited to be making creatures they knew weren't going to be covered up in CGI. They knew they were going to be on set in front of the camera, and they would, you know, the audience, what you would see on set would be what the audience saw at home.
Oh.
That was, I think, very validating.
No, totally. It seemed like a tribute to Fangoria.
Absolutely.
With the bulging eyeballs and blood and head, a lot of decapitations. And
my favorite creature is one that's it's literally a bucket of body parts named Death Trapper. And his backstory is that he just wanders around battlefields collecting corpses and then grinds them up and then shoots blood at the audience, or at his enemies.
Oh, yeah. No, and I also like, this isn't a spoiler, so talk about a... What is it, the death of a warrior or the tribute? Could you tell what that is?
A little bit. I mean, I don't want to spoil it entirely.
Oh, okay.
But PG himself is an individual of honor, too. Like, but it's a very skewed kind of honor. And there are moments in the film where he is impressed with with an intergalactic warrior, and he will then say, you know, "You fought well, so I will give you a warrior's death." But nobody wants the warrior's death. Everyone, and what I love about this joke is that anytime he says warrior's death, the kids don't know what he means, but all the aliens are like, "Oh, no, not a warrior's death, not a warrior's death, please, anything but that."
So just briefly, we only have about a minute left, but Mimi and Luke are the center of the film. They're in almost every scene, and they're played by Nita Jose Hanna and Owen Meyer. And this looks like this is the first feature film they've ever made. What was it like working with first time feature actors that they're at the center of the entire movie.
You know, they always say never work with kids, but it's hard to believe that after working with Nita and Owen, because they were honestly among the most professional individuals on the set. And a lot of that, I think, you know, that was what we were looking for in casting. We weren't necessarily always looking for the look that we had imagined. We were looking for, actors who would bring a lot to the role. And yeah, Nita, this was her first feature ever, but she was desperate for the role. She really wanted it. And it was just clear that she was the funniest person in the room when she auditioned. She just had a natural sense of humor, was not self-conscious at all. It was really, really terrific to work with her and Owen. And we were so lucky. I mean, Nita came to set with everyone's line memorized, not even hers, because she comes from a musical theater background, and she expected to know that she thought the pressure would be on her to know the whole movie. So there are many days where Steve would walk on set and go, "What are we doing right now?" And Nita would know. Nita would immediately know before the AD said anything.
Well, you could tell. Really, you could tell she knows what she's doing. Peter Kaplowski, thanks so much for speaking with me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. I'm glad you enjoyed the movie. And Psycho Gorman on VOD everywhere, please.
Yes,
watch it so we can make PG-13.
Psycho Gorman opens today, Friday, across North America. This is Daniel Garber of the Movies each Friday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.